November 17, 2016, the AMAS Citizen Involvement Committee is now called to order. Welcome to everybody. I'm Jeff Gardner of the AMAS staff. Heather Davis Rydell, also of the AMAS staff.
Hello, everyone.
Seth Bush, our GIS expert on staff. If you'd like to introduce yourself, that'd be great. Shall we start with you, sir?
Joel Helms.
Hi, welcome.
Dave Mangold, Randolph Township, Southern Portage County.
Bill Mackey, retired. Just a member of the AMAS for quite a while now.
Fred Wise, and I'm sort of a bike advocate.
Justin Baker.
On your little packet there, you have the minutes from the April 14th CIC meeting. We could take a minute to look those over and see if we have any changes.
Our last meeting was April?
We actually had one in August, but none of you came.
We were enjoying summer, yeah, not reading our email.
And a lot of people did. We moved our August, it was actually July, we moved it out to August because we wanted to highlight Barberton. So we had our August, our summer CIC was in Barberton. So we had a quick tour of the Magic Mile and heard about some other things going on.
I move we approve the minutes of last meeting.
Are we?
I don't think we're doing that
anymore. We're not doing that
anymore. We
no longer follow Robert's rules of order.
Get away from Robert's and all the membership.
Yep.
It looks good.
Looks good. I didn't see any wrong with it.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Let's forge ahead to the highlight of the meeting here, the AMAS Regional Public Transit Plan. Part of our plan update process, we're working on our 2040 Regional Transportation Plan, so we're working on all the components, all the modes of travel. And here we have the Public Transit Plan. So with the assistance of Metro and PARTA, we put together Public Transit Plan, which is available on the website. What's in your packet here this evening is just the summary and the recommendations, not the full plan. Inside the cover, you'll see the table of contents. So to see the full transit plan, you can find it on the website in PDF. Seth did the maps in the transit plan. It's very informative.
Somebody decided not to share them with you.
Oh, they're not in here.
Well, they're all equally good, and I wasn't going to print them all out. So what you have in front of you is just a summary of the plan, and then you'll see it says page 53, chapter 9, transit recommendations. So that just lists the recommendations there. The transit plan ends up being a component into the congestion management process report, which is item B that they'll follow here in a minute.
We're going to have comments, right?
I'm sorry. Mr. Mack?
We're going to have comments on 3A.
Oh, you can comment on anything you want.
Well.
But I was just going to say that the transit plan leads into the next phase of the planning process, and that's the congestion management process. And then ultimately, we end up with the projects for the 2040 Regional Transportation Plan. So some of those projects will be transit-related, highway-related, bike-related, pedestrian-related. So item 3A is the transit plan. And eventually, we'll end up with a financially constrained regional transportation plan in May. As I said on chapter 9, page 53, you'll see that there are recommendations at the regional level, at the municipality level, at the local level, and then also for the transit agencies. And if you're not aware, Metro and PARTA have been engaging in a lengthy public involvement process for restructuring their routes. Metro's is called Driving Forward. It's been a very extensive restructuring system. PARTA has had public meetings, but they also have a consultant that's putting together some route restructuring to make their system more efficient. They're going to review some of their routes. Metro's changes to their route structure are a little more extensive, and they have a lot of different plans in the works that will involve capital expenditures as well as operational changes to their system. So our first recommendation is to reduce or eliminate service on very low ridership routes. For a long time, it was Metro's policy because the sales tax is countywide to run service out to Green or Springfield or Richfield, and they really didn't have very much ridership on those routes, and part of their restructuring effort is to take a look at those routes and decide whether it's worth running. Some of them are not getting any ridership on there. So.
And they use a smaller bus. It's always disappointing to see a large bus with you in, but realize at times that same bus will cycle downtown during rush hour and have a full load. Right? It just seems...
it's interlined with another route, so it's not like... Yes.
Right, and it reflects poorly to those that don't believe in spending money for the public good. It's a concern that I've always had.
Recommendation number two is to continue to support NeoRide, and if no one's familiar with NeoRide, it's a council of governments group that was set up by Metro, PARTA, and SARTA in Stark County. So the three transit agencies in the area here are trying to coordinate their services for regular line routes and for their demand responsive service for the elderly and disabled curb-to-curb service. So they're trying to eventually reach a point where they can link up their routes and they can also coordinate their scheduling and then and try to have some kind of a central dispatching for their demand response elderly and disabled people. A lot of people in Stark County or Portage County come to Akron for medical care, so that's an issue. Also, for retail or for employment trips, there are a lot of people in Portage County that might work, say, in Stowe, so they have a difficult time getting from one transit agency to another. So the purpose of NeoRide is to try to coordinate those services. So we want to support that. AMAS has provided funds for PARTA and for Metro for coordination in the past. We will continue to do that.
There is the alternative of Uber and Lyft in the area. How is that affecting rideshare or ridership for these demand response services?
I have not heard any information coming from it. It would probably affect PARTA more because I think as a percentage of their trips, PARTA does more demand response trips. They have, of course, campus bus service around Kent State, and that's high volume ridership. But PARTA's original mission going back, you know, years was essentially elderly and disabled door-to-door, curb-to-curb service in Portage County. They're gonna continue to do that, but I haven't heard them mention anything about Uber affecting
They're certainly, the citizens of the county are certainly using it, and for interregional travel from Ravenna all the way up to Streetsboro, all the way into Cleveland, too, in the suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
I have great familiarity with that.
That tend to be more a commuter choice rider type activity versus, say, medical trips?
Both medical and non-medical.
There are return from work. Handicap accessible Uber?
They are to be, yes. Okay. If someone comes to ride with a wheelchair, they cannot be refused.
Okay.
It's a great service and very cost effective and on demand rather than scheduling.
Yes.
Now, is Metro still call it the SCAT bus, or
yes,
they have a new name for it?
SCAT.
It's called the SCAT. But that needs to be scheduled 24 hours in advance?
24 hours. Good evening. Welcome to the MNCIC. We have a sign-in sheet there, and we have a packet of information to the left of that.
All right, thanks for the info.
Let's see here. recommendation three, page 54 there. We are asking the transit agencies and our municipal members, AMAS committee members, to consider transit-oriented development in their development guides or zoning or with Metro's planning and restructuring and PARTA as well. Everybody's familiar, you know, with your standard bus stop or the transit center downtown or the Kent Central Gateway, and there are various types of stops. You have bus pull-offs, bus bays, shelters or just benches or what have you. With a transit-oriented development, particularly with Metro's restructuring, they're considering moving away from their radial network, which is centered around the transit center, and have multiple nodes outside the city center. So, for example, at West Market Street, East Market Street, Arlington, and Exchange, that area in there, there are a number of buses that come through that area. They would like to run more through there, and then they would like to restructure the routes so that you don't have to ride all the way downtown to the transit center to go back out again. So if you're going in a slightly different direction, if you're coming from the east and you want to go north, you shouldn't have to come all the way downtown to the transit center, get on another bus and essentially drive almost where you came from and then go north. So they're going to try to run routes that kind of fit in around the outside instead of everything radiating from the center. So there are a number of nodes that they want to do this at, several miles outside of the downtown area. So they could link up multiple routes at these nodes, at these transit nodes. So they're asking, they say the city of Akron or Barberton, Cuyahoga Falls, or the city of Kent to promote transit-oriented development so the transit works around those nodes. Not just around those nodes, but in other areas as well.
Are they going to be coming up from Stark County to meet at those nodes as well?
The nodes are outside of the city center, so yep. The linkages right now, they could, depending on where the node is, but one sort of node would be the airport. So Metro and Stark County Transit do meet at the airport.
Yes.
And right now, the timing for that is not great. They need to redo their schedule, so they're linking up. And then they lay over there so that they can catch the route either to go from SARTA to Metro or from Metro to SARTA. Instead of just dropping people off, they have to wait. If someone's coming from the other direction, then they might have to wait another hour and a half or 2 hours or something. So that would be one possibility. Mm-hmm. Another one could be Stowe Kent between Metro and PARTA.
Mm-hmm.
But the nodes, transit nodes that we're talking about in recommendation three here, probably the bulk of that would be, as I mentioned, the example of East Market and Arlington and Exchange, that area there where a number of routes come through. It's for multiple Metro routes for people to get on and off and switch buses,
mm-hmm.
or to not have all the buses come down to the transit center, only one would. So then you don't have five different routes that come down East Market Street, you just have the one. So all the routes that would converge at that location, people might have to transfer there, but they wouldn't have to come all the way downtown to transfer.
So I've got a friend that lives on just off East Market Street, has to travel all the way down to the transit center to continue on West Market, making the trip
right
well over an hour.
Exactly.
In duration.
Perfect example.
Versus a line haul East Market to West Market. And I can tell you there's a lot of Market Street transfers on Uber also that are being done that people just don't like using the bus. And if they've got the money, they're willing to pay the extra money for the on-demand straight through corridor service.
Your friend does not get off the bus on East Market over by, say, High Street and then walk the 2-3 blocks over to West Market Street on the other side of Main and catch one there.
Okay, I'm not sure how
she
knows.
Have to do that either, but yeah.
But I know that she was thought she has to come downtown often on the transfers coming or going.
Right. And it's easier to wait at the transit center than outside.
Sure, if there is a connection, but they still have the meets, or what do you call that, the lineups?
Yes.
on a regular basis.
They do. So we give a few examples of transit-oriented development here in terms of mixed land uses, accessibility, sidewalks, good pedestrian access, places for buses to pull off, a sheltered area, things of that nature.
Is there going to be some capital money available for improvements that need to be made? I mean, a spay of layover points for these smaller nodes.
One of the, you know, the 2040, all of our regional transportation plans in past years are financially constrained. We can come up with a lot of plans for things to do with the money, but the plan has to be fiscally constrained. What ends up happening frequently is somehow the money does become available. So if you go back to one of our plans from, say, 15 or 20 years ago, there was no funding for the transit center in downtown or the Kent Central Gateway, but the Metro got stimulus money, or there was an earmark, or there was a Tiger Grant awarded, say, to PARTA. Mm-hmm. So sometimes the money does materialize for some of these things.
You can make the wish and money.
We've had good success in getting funds for some very large capital projects.
And developers are willing to chip in some, too, for transit-oriented development, if I'm familiar with providing some real estate for mm-hmm. a bus bay to add the value to their to the building, mm-hmm. the structure, commercial area that they're building.
But in terms of reliable year-after-year funding, Metro and PARTA get a large amount of capital money from the federal government through the Federal Transit Administration. And we and Metro and PARTA have to prioritize that money. And a lot of that money goes to preventive maintenance, maintaining their current fleet, and maintaining their buildings, bus shelters, signs, all that capital equipment that they own, or that they're going to purchase, new buses. And Metro, since they got their second quarter percent sales tax, is in pretty good shape financially at this point. So with the federal money and with the local sales tax money, for them to put together a number of transit nodes over the next few years, budgeting, you know, they could do something at East Market, Arlington, and then maybe in a year or two, Walhaven, say.
Now, is there going to be any of this downtown as far as the transit nodes or anything like that?
Well, the transit nodes are so that Metro can link up a number of routes away from the downtown area.
Okay.
So,
okay. That answers my next question. That I mean,
well, they've got the downtown transit center.
Yeah.
So then to expand their system out to meet the needs of maybe people a couple miles out. Wait, how far do you think East Market and Arlington is from here? Do you think from downtown?
I think it's like more than a mile and a half, maybe two.
It's about two point one.
All right, Walhaven's probably, I think Walhaven is from here.
They got their GPS device?
Oh, no, that's all right. I was just curious. But it's a distance that's much past the walkability. No one wants to walk from Walhaven to downtown or from Walhaven to Rolling Acres, for example, where there's another transit center. So, it's outside the comfort of walking distance. So you're linking up multiple buses to try to make it more efficient for time and for the use of the buses.
Question for you.
Yes, sir.
In all these recommendations, how much money or influence does AMATS have in getting these things done? If they're not funded through federal funds, you don't really have money to give to these people, allocate, right?
That's correct.
So you can't really, if they don't want to fight the recommendations, basically they can ignore it.
Right. We can't force the city of Akron to assist Metro in developing a transit-oriented node at that location to get a bus pull off, you know, that requires right-of-way. So it would have to be a project through the city of Akron to acquire some right-of-way. Well, Akron would maintain the right-of-way, but for them to use that space for, say, a bus pull-off or a bus shelter, they always have to get permission for bus shelters.
So,
crosswalks.
I guess the question is, why is that not supporting the planning for them? Just basically making a burden.
Well, the recommendations that are in this plan are so that we, as a transportation planning agency, can coordinate the different modes of travel. So a lot of what we do, we fund, but a lot of things that we do is not necessarily funded. It's just part of the planning process.
So, for example, remember President Obama's, we're going to dump money into shovel-ready infrastructure. We had a good plan. It wasn't Steele's Corners. It was the next one up. On Route 8 North.
Chart Road?
The interchange at Seasons Road.
I mean, that was a shovel ready. Everything was figured out, and you know, most of the right of way had been agreed upon. You know, how much we're going to buy, what the soil is like, how much concrete you need. You know, blueprints were there, so give us the money and it goes.
Okay, but in that situation, AMATS actually did get the money funneled.
Oh yeah, the money was funneled to the feds and the state.
But in a situation that you don't, you know, some of these plans you do with it. Fort County wants to do something and doesn't fit your plan, you don't have any influence on it because you don't fund any of it.
Well, there's not a single project on the highway side, on the transit side, bike, pedestrian. If there's no sponsor to do the project, then it's not going to be done. Nope, there's no project. In all the planning that we do, the TIP is program funds. Right. But every single project in the TIP has a project sponsor.
Right.
So if no one applies for that project, would you
assist these organizations, these agencies, to apply for things, even if they're not funds, grants that are under your control?
Oh, absolutely. If Metro's going to apply
you provide that facility, you know, there have to be some of the grant writing or planning that goes into that funding set for
them. Well, the idea is.
Right. Okay.
If Metro, let's say Metro was going to apply for a Tiger grant, then of course they would need the MPO's approval, encouragement to begin with, and eventually the approval of the project. So, and then of course it would have to be put into the TIP, even if it's not AMATS attributable funding. So ODOT does tons of projects around here. It's not AMATS money, but it is federal money, and it's being spent in the AMATS area. So it ends up going through our policy committee for approval. So all those ODOT projects are not AMATS attributable money, but they're the sponsor and they're spending the federal money here.
But so if it wasn't in the TIP, would ODOT still do it?
No, they couldn't.
Okay. So basically you have a role in that.
It's got to go through all the planning process.
Some of these you may or may not have a role in.
That's true.
Yeah, they're given the vision.
Right.
Well, my feeling on AMS is they give the vision to the communities who may not have the vision.
Well, I agree wholeheartedly. My problem is that I think you should have more influence on it.
Oh.
And there's some way to do that.
They're an agency. We elect the people that make the decisions.
Agree with that. But,
right.
But they, you know, if you're giving them money, you always have some influence. Or if you have to get approval from you, you have some influence.
True. Yeah. But we would approve it. We can't make them do it.
Okay, I understand that.
But
they couldn't do something that you didn't approve of.
They could not spend AMATS or any federal money, whether it's AMATS federal money or their own federal money, without the approval of the policy committee.
When it's state money, too, is that?
Yeah, they can move with their own municipalities.
Right. Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, Walmart wants.
Even if it was something that would be detrimental to what you had in your TIPs.
Well, that would be discussion at the policy committee.
But, right.
But if Walmart wanted to make a three-lane road in front of their store, it's currently a two-lane road, and they got the money,
and
the municipality says, fine with me, they can go out and spend their own money and put a three-lane road in there. I mean, that's within
the federal one says you can't do it.
Well, I'm just saying. I mean, it's valid. And the theory is, you know, if you got the money, money talks, go and do it. As long as it doesn't, you know, interfere with fire or safety, you know, all right.
But if it interfered with a future plan, a plan of a major road development going in through that area,
Could they still go ahead and do it? Or would they, would that be subject to a lawsuit or something?
Not from us.
No, no. Strictly the policy committee to handle that stuff up.
Well, but the policy committee is part of the AMATS, right?
The policy committee technically is AMATS. We work for the policy committee.
And our input goes over culturally.
But I recommend not to do it. They could.
Attendance at a policy committee meeting, I like to actually see the work getting done and the arguments and discussions that sometimes do occur. There'll be one next week or
a couple weeks.
It'll be after the thing.
Yeah, it's always after this meeting.
15.
You have your technical today?
No, remember, we do CIC four times a year now. That's right.
So we're not always, we're not in sync with that anymore.
Correct.
Right.
You're getting everything fresh tonight.
Yeah.
You guys are the first ones to hear any of this.
So technical will be the
week before policy.
The week before, and then December. Do we have the December meeting date?
The 7th and the 15th.
Okay. I'm going to try to look at my calendar. It's not on this, and I don't believe we had a mail out.
Mail out's on the 30th.
Still at Quaker Square?
Yes, this is not on the
8th and the 15th. Excuse me. The 8th and the 15th, right? They are a week apart, right?
Yeah.
Thursdays?
Mm-hmm.
The 8th and the 15th.
That is correct.
And at Quaker Square at what time? 1 o'clock?
They're not at Quaker Square.
They're not at Quaker Square.
Yeah, the Hilton Garden Inn on East Market.
Yeah.
Where at?
The Hilton Garden Inn on East Market.
And then west, our way out towards Fairland.
Yes, Goodyear.
Yep. East Market.
Oh, East Market. Yeah. That, okay.
Near
that
Goodyear. Okay. Right next door to Goodyear Hall.
Okay, I know where that's at.
East Market.
Mm-hmm. Sorry about the giggle. We've been there all year this year.
Yeah.
At the Hill Garden. You've been busy.
I've been keeping up with my mail.
Okay, we should let Jeff finish.
Yeah,
that's all right. But probably the biggest recommendation in all of this, probably the most influential recommendation, is something that Metro and FARTA are already doing. They have it, their route restructuring is scheduled for early 2017. Metro is going to change some of their routes, and FARTA will also. They're going to condense them, straighten them out a little bit. They're going to have more frequent service. They have some high priority routes. I think in your packet, we're going to jump ahead partially here, but in the back of your packet is two tables. There's a little color in there. It says Metro and FARTA level of service analysis. You'll see on the Metro table there, it says proposed high frequency routes. And FARTAs are not marked as high frequency, but their campus service is going to become slightly more frequent than it is now, and they're going to eliminate two of their routes. The Kent Circulator, I believe that they're going to eliminate completely and replace it with demand response service. They just don't have any ridership there. And they're only running it a few times a day anyway, so... So the plan is for both transit agencies to increase the frequency of their high priority routes so that people can essentially, during peak times, just wait for the bus. You don't even need a schedule because it's going to come every 15 minutes or 20 minutes.
I attended several meetings, and they're doing very good. They have new software to analyze how many people get on and off at a stop. Now, if you're familiar with the north end of Akron, you go up North Main, take a right up Cotter Falls Avenue, go all the way down to the Swensons, and instead of going on Chapel Hill, you take a left and go down the boulevard over the Gorge Bridge into Cotter Falls. There's a bus stop there in the middle of the grass. I've passed that thing numerous times, and no one there once, probably 5 years, I've seen a person waiting for a bus there. I have no idea why that was ever there. I asked Metro. They'll find out when they run this software. But for everybody's edification, millennials don't run cars. They tend to use public transport, bicycles, Uber and Lyft, friends, but it's the public transport. Metro is trying to get these high volume routes to where, as we just said, every 20 minutes a bus comes by, you don't need to look at a bus schedule and find the things out. It's just going to be a good rotating bus schedule that will get you around the area. So that'll be a plus for not only for millennials, but for people who use the bus regularly. I asked Metro about bus stops. I mean, you're standing in the rain with a bag of groceries or your school books or whatever. What about bus stops? And they're, again, analyzing the number of people, and they're looking to put in these bus stops where people can take shelter. I mean, winter's coming. Sunday we have snow coming here. You know, you don't want to be standing out in the snow with a 25-mile-an-hour gale. But they're looking at putting in bus stops. So this gets into the recommendation part three where the development, urban design, but bicycle transit-friendly neighborhood to attract people to say, oh, it's not a problem to ride the bus. I got a place to shelter. I know it's going to be here every 20 minutes. I can do my business. I can come back and go home. So they're getting more customer-friendly, hopefully, by analyzing their ridership. Going down the common TOD treatments there, attractive signage, pedestrian shelters, parking located behind the buildings. That, of course, what Chicago Falls built up there at New Portage Crossing. Now, you park behind the stores and walk out to Portage Trail to the front entry. But the well-designed bus shelters. Metro, I talked with them, they said if it's like in the Devil Strip, they can probably get a bus shelter put in. I mean, it's sort of like working with a city, and there's room. Again, I'm going to go back to Chapel Hill area. You're going west on Howe Road. You stop by the Books A Million store. It used to be some other bookstore. Very narrow double strip. 3 foot, 4 foot sidewalk. A lot of grass behind it, but it belongs to Books A Million. So in order to put a bus shelter there, they would have to go to the company that owns that place, ask for a donation, which they probably wouldn't do, buy it from them, buy the land, okay, which would then give them the legal right to put a bus shelter up there. And it's a well-attended bus shelter. There's always people out there, and there's carts sitting out there. My point for the AMATS is I'm trying to figure out how to put this into Chamber of Commerce. Maybe AMATS coming out to speak to Chamber of Commerce is saying, 20-minute pickups, you're going to get a lot of ridership. If the bus stop is in front of your place, or you put a bus stop in front of your place and put Joe's Hamburgers on the inside, built this for your, come inside with your ticket, get 5% off a hamburger. I'm looking at sales or advertising. And it's to the owner's benefit if you have land and you want to put up your own bus stop. I'm sure the city that you're in, a municipality, would say, well, it's got to be a certain size, a certain color, whatever. But, you know, or you can make one out of wood. I mean, like a kid's up in the snow belt, or kid's snow house where they wait for the bus to come again. But anyway, Metro's trying to get better service, and I think they're headed that way with this every 20-minute pickup. Instead of coming downtown where you can move faster through interlocking rings to get around town and pivot. The bus shelter, I don't know, that's between the cities and the property owners. If you put one up, it's almost, think of most businesses. What does every business have? If you go to a business, what do you have? A parking lot. They put in parking lots. They expect you to drive there. But the population changes. We have older drivers now. They may not want to drive. Maybe they'll take Uber or Lyft or taxi or SCAT or something, but the buses being fast and getting around and they're handicapped accessible. If I was a business owner, I'd pop in a bus shelter, a pedestrian shelter, whatever you want to call it, bike shelter, right on my property because I'm going to attract business. Now, I don't know if you can carry that to the Chamber of Commerce. Just tell them 20 minutes, more people are taking buses. Millennials take buses. Mm-hmm. Handicapped. Da, 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 da. You got a big shopping population you can appeal to if you have a nice shelter where they can wait to get off in the rain or wait to get on during the rain or snow. I see a synergy between planning and actually doing it and getting the population on the transit handle? Just an idea.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'd like to make some comments on that. The bike share and what they call that, the ride share services are very popular in a lot of the urban areas. Did we not just get a bike company that was going to locate here for bike rental services?
Or out of Kent, or maybe?
No, there's a bike share. There's a bike share down by Canal. Okay. Actually downtown, but it's run by Downtown Partners, I believe, that wants to be supporting.
The Summit Cycle
Bike.
The four that are at City Center.
Yeah, there's four. There's more than there's just the four, but that's the four that are
easily
successful.
At the City Center, and at Lock Canal Bike Kitchen.
Down Lock 3.
Those, like bus stops, are great for bringing in that
tracking business,
the transit, the non-driving business. And if you're the business that's adjacent to that, there is that advantage. Mm-hmm. The other thing the millennials are really big about is the apps for the bus location. I assume Metro has all the buses equipped, and they have
all the signs have them.
They got to get out and go for rides more often. So, yeah, I see that in transit agencies all throughout the U.S. when I travel.
You're not a millennial,
babe. I'm post-millennial, or pre-millennial. Pre-millennial. I don't know, what were the cutoffs like in their 20s or young 30s?
At 81. Before I forget. One of Seth's maps.
She's not a millennial.
It's one of Seth's.
Sorry,
what
Seth.
Is that?
No, I'm
it's
not.
One of Seth's maps from Transit Plan. It's a... transit coverage. So the purple
sorry.
Is metro.
Sorry,
and
I need
it's
the bus.
Part of
you're coming with me.
No PowerPoint today for you guys. Okay. Well, that's
we're gonna go on the four there, or what?
I jumped ahead to the high frequency routes and the increased hours of operation.
Just a real quick question. Is there any plan or need plan for autonomous vehicles that you show up?
It's funny that you mentioned that. We did not mention that. We did not put that in the public transit plan, although they have been doing some testing on buses, I think, in Germany, some driverless buses in Germany. Was that Mercedes or who was doing that? I don't know.
There's so many popping up now. They're doing their own little one or two car tests in their own countries, in their own capitals.
Yeah.
I went down to Columbus, and there's self-driving farm tractors. Oh. All right. And the benefit for the farmer is you're out there, you're trying to get your crop in, you got 1,000 acres, and grain's coming. Mm-hmm. And you can only drive one of these hogs for like 12 hours, and you're beat. But a computer on board... Mm-hmm. That puppy would just go along and combine it and put your truck next to it and take it out, and you're done, and you can beat the rain and rent this machine. And that's from co-op ownership of self-driving tractors because it worked day and night.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't need to give it a break, mm-hmm. you know? And couple that with the drones and remote sensing technology. Now you can fly over a farmer's field. The drone will radar map your field to within a centimeter. That data is downloaded to the robot tractor. It will absolutely make a perfect contour plow. A farmer can eyeball it.
The robot tractor?
But it will absolutely make a perfect contour plow field where during heavy rain you don't wash over. You know, it's like you created little terraces all the way down. So I would add self-driving vehicle nodes, if you want to call them that, because they're going to have a fleet with like taxi cabs, and people will call for them on their phones, and they'll go out and they'll start working until they get to a point they got to come back and be serviced or recharged or whatever, and then they're going to go out again. But they'll be available day and night, 24/7.
You guys, I think I should mention, we probably should try to move along and sure we stay on topic.
8 o'clock. Right.
Yeah, and they're going to start kicking us out in a little bit. We've got a couple other things to get through.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
But future planning, just like...
Robot tractors. I'm on it.
Only if you're in the farm.
You're transit pickups.
I'm into farming. Okay, Jeff.
Heather has item 3C, so we might want to shortchange Heather when the time comes.
3C.
I do have one quick comment regarding the recommendations. Yeah.
I'd really like to see a recommendation to expand it out further. The ERI seems like a good way to start, but maybe it's time with the changes in the area to have Metro, SARA, and HARA blend together, become one. Right. I know it's multi-county, a little more difficult than that, but nice to see that integration get at that point when we do that.
Mm-hmm. Regional planning.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Regional planning.
I mentioned that to my people, like, 15 years ago. I wanted to call it Aorta. It's the only word that had RTA in it that I could come up with, and I thought, well, you know.
Well, somebody got a heart attack.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
All right.
So,
yeah, are there any other comments on the transit plan?
This will be discussed at the policy meeting next month,
yes.
The whole plan, which
whole
is
plan.
Available online.
Yeah, yes, it will be our mail out, if we want to call it that. We don't mail out like we used to, but the mail out is supposed to be next week. So this, I'm anticipating the full transit plan, 59 pages almost. We'll be on the website, let's say next week, but not next week.
Still think plans for the future light rail transit should be on the agenda. It's electrified, powered by renewable energy.
Yeah.
Right. Decades out, maybe, but we need to start thinking that way.
Okay. All right. Item 3B, the draft congestion management process report. The CMP, congestion management process report, is one of our every 4 year reports that we do. It's one of the last big reports that we do before we do the 2040 regional transportation plan. So the TIP, of course, we do every 2 years. The plan we do every 4 years. This is probably the biggest component in the plan. So we're looking at multiple modes, and we're looking at congestion on the area's roadways or any other mode that influences congestion, people moving from point A to point B. So at this point in the planning process, we have our recommendations that are going to end up in the congestion management process plan that will go to the policy committee on December 15th. And the full report for the CMP will be on the website at some point, maybe a week and a half from now, once it's finalized. So there are recommendations for multiple modes. The two big modes are the highway network, and then following would be the transit network. So we gave you here two tables, table 8.1 and table 8.2, that kind of summarize the things that we're looking at out through 2040 to address congestion in the area, to move people and freight as efficiently as possible in the MS area. Part of it, of course, has to do with our coordination with ODOT. So on table 8.1, you'll see two references to track projects here. These are ODOT-sponsored projects. Much of it is currently underway. There are a number of phases to these projects, and it's important that we include them in the 2040 plan. Much of it will be done outside of the current TIP into the next draft TIC, which we're starting to get together now. And then on table 8.2, the second table there, you have our arterial intersection recommendations. The community is listed on the left, and then it'll have the recommendation there. And a lot of what you see here will be projects that'll be sponsored by our members. And every 2 years, we go out for funding with the funds that we get. And our members compete for that funding. It's limited. At least the funds that we get that go to the policy committee are very limited. So we've included these projects here to reduce congestion, reduce emissions, move people more efficiently through the AMS area across the system that we've invested in for these many years. So please look at those.
On the 224 project in Springfield, two concrete median, not afraid that's an expressway or high passive highway, are they?
I think the concrete median is for safety purposes and to prevent illegal U-turns and things of that nature.
Protect pedestrians for crosswalk area. Mm-hmm. So otherwise, that's kind of an outmoded technology to build the curbs. Back in the 80s, every new intersection would have these big curbs and people were always running into them. And then it evolved by the 90s to just use paint. There's still some of that relic 1970s, 80s thinking out there of curbs. You can see all the straight marks that people have bumped into. Unless you're actually protecting the pedestrians, it's my understanding they'll do most everything with solid paint now. I'll have to look at that. And see
I'm not sure exactly. We don't have. We don't do drawings.
You don't do the design. Diagram.
So it's some of this is left up, of course, to the project sponsor when they apply for funds. Then eventually, if they get the funds, then they would design it. But
doesn't Jason say that he do a lot of the drawings with the City Planning Commission?
No. Well, he's the planning director.
Yeah.
I think the design would come through the Akron Engineering Bureau.
Okay. Well, yeah.
But I still think those need to be monitored and looked at because we still have the intersection rebuilds at 43, 44 there on US 224 crossing, where they did away with the sidewalks and any markings for pedestrians. I commented about that more than a year ago. And had I seen the plans prior to that, I would have objected and made the recommendation that those sidewalks and markings for pedestrians remain.
That was an ODOT.
That was ODOT sponsoring. Was out of the scope of what we do here, but they don't seem to care that people might want to walk in a small rural town. And I used to walk that way all the time, walking home from school.
Mm-hmm.
And I used that sidewalk, and I was disappointed to see it taken up 2 years ago. And no provisions made for replacement. And it was still good sidewalk. They poured some good concrete there back in the 60s.
Kind of mayor, you're going to vote them all office or impeach them.
All three trustees, I'd like to see impeached on other matters. So, we'll work on that.
Crazy.
No, that could be stricken from the record. That would be in a lot of trouble. Please. I'd like to be able to see drawings if we could sometime. I don't know if that's within our scope at all.
Do the cities put up drawings for the engineering departments? I don't think
Colorado Falls does anything. With outreach?
There is outreach on State Road from Graham Road north up to past Steele's Corner. There was a lot of input given by the people, myself included, who drive that road a lot, about what we wanted to see on an improvement left turn lanes because they have a child care center, they have different businesses, you know, somebody turning left in a two-lane road, you have a big single-lane parking lot. Bike paths have been added, which we wanted, sidewalks have been added in some areas, so everybody had input as to what would go where. Now, it's always good to go back, because I went back, if you know where Bath and State Road is, there's an Amedeo's there and a Chinese place, and well, I think for the engineers, they exceeded the angle of repose on the embankment. I was walking there. The sidewalk was washing out. I mean, literally washing out from underneath. Half the sidewalk was going with the porter. So I got with the mayor and said, somebody made a bad engineering drawing here, and you need a retaining wall like tomorrow before the storm comes because that was last week. And
whole sidewalk.
Yeah, the whole. I said all this work we've done, and it's going to slide down the hill. You know, so they said they got right on it. I'll have to walk out there again and see if I improve.
Make sure it's daylight.
Yeah.
No, I've got reflective clothing.
I was waiting for the super bright moon when you're out walking.
Yeah, super. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't know. You got to stay ahead of or on top of what's happening in your municipality. If you're going to affect what's in your municipality, I don't vote Napa. Napa care less what I say, but you know, you're out of the city.
Traffic engineers are good, but they're not always
perfect. What is the time frame? Is this 2040?
Not through 2040, eventually.
Any of these, any more coming up sooner than that?
These are projects that are not in the TIP now.
Okay.
So I would say that anything that's on these lists, this list, either one, well, the part of these are currently under construction on the first table, table 8-1, the first two are currently under construction.
Northfield Center Township, the old 8th Road at 82 and Brandywine. You might as well put an hour down on here, you know, turn on your whatever record player in your car, because getting south, trying to go through there, if there's some other problem on Route 8, traffic backs up a half mile. It's like it takes forever at that T intersection to get through there. So I'm glad Northfield Center is addressing that issue, trying to widen, make a right turn lane, because...
Well, we hope they will.
Operational improvements of some sort. Put in a roundabout.
You guys have been getting lots of traffic counts this summer, I've noticed, and you're using a lot of that data for...
Yes.
I've seen the single tube and the double tubes all around.
You had lots of it.
And some of those are ODOTs.
Almost all of the tube ones are ODOT this year.
That's good.
Yeah, almost all of the tube counts in the area this year are from ODOT, not us.
You guys didn't do much?
Not too many hose counts. We got new radar counters, because we don't have two traffic counters this year. We only have one guy that's able to do it, and the radars doesn't put him out into traffic. It allows him to set up without having to impede traffic or put himself in safety's or out of safety's way. So it's been one of those situations where if you're running over hoses, it's probably ODOT. We will eventually get those numbers. We don't get those immediately. But we have accomplished approximately 140, 150 counts this year. Better than we did last year, so the new radar counters have done tremendous.
They don't get hungry, they don't get tired.
Exactly,
Go vacation.
You'll see them like on a tripod or something?
No, they're generally mounted to a pole along the side of the road.
Oh, okay.
You could see it and never even really know what it was.
Just think like a deer. You're being watched by a game camera.
Does it fix the radar on your detector?
Local oversight is an absolute necessity, and it starts even though City Green passed all kinds of feel-good things, bike rights, and pedestrians and everything else. 2 years later, they're approving a contract for the designing engineer, and his specs didn't call for any of these provisions. And you got to start at that level. If the design engineer doesn't put it in, it's hard as hell to get it added. Even though the city says, we're going to do all this, they're not. So it's watch every contract that goes through your city. You got to read them.
Go to your city council meetings. Go talk to your engineer.
It's hard to get the project done exactly.
Yeah.
As we would envision it, if they're the sponsor.
I have a question regarding the project listed on there too. Is that a three water removal possibility? That's our 1444.
That's our big interchange there between 14 and 5, 44, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
got some loops, and they've just finished the big project there at the 59-14 intersection. Yeah.
So the recommendation is simply to reevaluate it after this other intersection. This intersection is complete.
Well, the where it says location there, there's a problem with congestion there, but they're doing a project nearby it. So once that project is done, they'll see how it affects
the
that location.
Do a drive count again and see.
That's
the freeway a little less.
So they want to put something in the plan, take a look at that area because it's congested there. But they don't want to recommend a project until the nearby project is done.
Mm-hmm.
And they
see how it functions.
See what that is in the future.
Yeah, that's all.
Waiting times, congestion, accident reports, which come out every so often. How many accidents?
Yes.
Did we reduce accidents, or are they saying, we've got to do something different? So.
That had been a critical point, and you still have the forced merge there coming off. 44-5 onto 14, there's no acceleration lane. You're right onto the bridge. Those of us that travel that all the time will get over anticipating somebody might be coming that way, but then we're forced then to cross over again to avoid the left-hand turn lane. And it, I do agree there maybe needs an acceleration ramp there, but we don't have enough width on the bridge.
Where is that?
Route 544 northbound, or about Route 5 would be eastbound, taking the ramp up to 14 to go north on 14.
Okay.
There's a ramp that comes up to a bridge, and there's no acceleration.
Yeah. Okay.
I think those type of arrows you have force everybody out of the right lane to keep that clear so that when you come up that way, you don't have to do that immediate merge before going to the bridge.
Okay.
And then, of course,
you're coming off of 540, the bypass going on to 14.
Okay.
I understand what you're talking about.
Yep. Watch that. I drive that all the time when I'm heading north to Cleveland. And I used to be coming around the loop. Now I come straight through on 14, but if I'm high traffic volume times, I'll get over to the left lane just to anticipate somebody coming up and not have that conflict.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what's next, boss?
Next is IM3C.
Hey,
that's
better.
So are you through with the CMP?
Oh, yeah, 3B. Does anyone have any additional comments on 3B, the draft congestion management?
Looking forward to seeing the improvements made.
Yep.
Assuming we can find the money to make one happen.
I just wanted to see if I could...
PowerPoint, yeah. Yeah, it works.
I didn't want to do all
that's
that.
Good.
Well, we don't mind going to sleep.
That's good.
All right. So we are in our fourth round of funding for the planning grants, and I thought it would be good to kind of update you guys on where we're at. This round's been a little bit different than all of the other ones. So, like I said, it's our fourth round of planning grant funds. The last time we did this was in 2013, so they've taken us a while to get through. For those of you that may not remember, our planning grants are available to communities to study the integration of land use and transportation. This round in particular, we've had an emphasis on complete streets. So we made the applications available in April of this year. They were due in May. We received 13 applications, which are all on our website, by the way. With those applications, we had a total ask of $358,499 when we only have $100,000 available, so we thought that was pretty great. Different this year, this round, I should say, we asked for matching funds. So we set it up with the scoring so that if a community was able to match, provide a local match, we would give them more points with regards to the scoring. So it wasn't required, but it turned out that those that provided matching funds were the ones that were able to get the grants. So this round in particular, we awarded four planning grants. We've never done that before. It's always been two. So it's a total of $115,200 in AMX funds, and we leveraged an additional $74,800. So we've got a total investment in the AMX region of $190,000. So we thought that was really promising. So again, it's four planning grants this time instead of two. So instead of starting them all at the same time, we started the first two, and then we're in the process of choosing a consultant for those first two planning grants. We're going to get the next two started in December. So here are the recipients of the planning grants this year. So we awarded the City of Kent and ODOT, as well as the City of Hudson. Those are our first two. Those are the two that we've started, and we're in the process of choosing a consultant for. Sorry, I'm trying to hurry. The next two we awarded to Twinsburg and the City of Green. We'll hopefully be meeting with them next month to get the ball rolling. I wanted to give you guys a little more information about the planning grants and provide some visuals. I get more out of seeing things rather than just hearing about them. So I put together some images on these slides that can hopefully help you better understand what we've got going on. So The State Route 261 Revisioning the Corridor, Planning the Future is our City of Kent and ODOT planning grant. That is the map that came with the application. And the purpose for the study is to find the best use for the excess capacity there on the State Route 261 corridor.
That's the four-lane section you're talking about only?
No.
Where's 43?
All the way over here is Middlebury.
Middlebury, right?
Yeah, it doesn't show up very well here. Middlebury. 43 is, this is Campus Center, here's 43, okay. Here's Franklin, all the way up to 59.
Yeah, back up there. Okay.
So we're looking at that entire area, trying to figure out the best use for all of that pavement, because there's a lot of pavement, but not a lot of cars. Mm-hmm. And there's also some safety issues. So here are my pictures. So this is from Sunnybrook, which turns into Franklin heading north of 261. This is looking at the intersection of 261. You can see this great walkway, right? It's right in front of Maple Brook Senior Housing, and it goes all the way up to that fence. And then at the fence, you have to walk around the fence in the grass, where there's probably going to be snow eventually, to get to the crosswalk and pedestrian signal. So that's just one thing we saw that was an issue. This right here is Water Street and 261, the intersection. I hope you can see right here is the median. Mm-hmm. And I took this picture and there were no cars coming, which is amazing. So you've got three lanes of traffic to cross. And this crosswalk is only on the west side of Water Street. Mm-hmm. Then you get to the median, you have to wait for another signal to then cross to the north side of 261. Mm-hmm. So this is another area we're looking at to improve.
No walk lights there.
There were pedestrian signals, yes.
Oh, there are pedestrian signals.
Yep. Can't really see that one. And then just to give you a better visual of what that intersection looks like, it's a lot of lanes of traffic.
A lot of traffic there, too.
Yeah, Water Street has a lot of traffic. I mean, it's a big intersection, but
That was part of the Interbelt project, wasn't it?
It was a long time ago,
On the 1970s idea that you have to have these four-lane highways bypass city center.
Yep. So this right here is State Route 261 and Campus Center. We're looking east. I'm sitting on 261 getting ready to turn left into Campus Center.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So this spot, if you're a student, if you're a cyclist, if you're just anybody, if you're going to cross here, there's no pedestrian signal, there's no crosswalk. So you're kind of taking your life in your hands. And then once you cross like the eastbound lanes of 261, or actually the, did I say east? I guess it's east.
You're looking east there in the photo, right? Yeah.
This is looking at Campus Center right there in the background.
Oh, okay.
So once you've crossed the eastbound lanes, you then get to hang out here and wait to cross the westbound lanes.
They don't mow the grass, they don't provide
there's
sidewalk
nothing.
Or anything.
Right. So
it's environmentally friendly.
Right. So those were the issues with the Kent grant. That's just kind of an overview of some of the issues we're running into. So the other grant that we've begun is the Hudson grant, which is the preliminary design for Veterans Trail, the downtown phase. So what we're trying to do here is to have a connection between the currently funded sections of Veterans Trail that are north and south of the city. So they need to find a way to come through the downtown area and connect down to a park that's here. So this is a Village Way looking east in front of the library. This is just the downtown section, trying to give you an idea of what we're looking at. This right here is on State Route 303. Looking west, there's two rail overpasses that you have to walk under, bike under. So these two ladies were walking. I took their picture. They had to stagger in order to walk through. And at one point, I'm standing in here taking pictures, and I realize a cyclist is coming. I literally had to jump up on the wall to get out of the way. So this right here is a very narrow spot to get people through. So it's a problem, because how do we get people through this whole area?
Those bridges will be coming up for renewal here sometime within a decade or so, because they're coming up on their 100-year lifespan presently. That project was done about 1907.
Okay.
So when that's done, we've got to make sure with the NS ODOT construction plans that they widen that out for accommodating
pedestrians, bicycles.
I think Hudson's looking to make a change sooner, and I don't know that they... I don't think they feel like that will be able to change at this point, that they're going to be able to widen... the road underneath there, the right of way underneath there. So this right here is Veterans Way, and the intersection of Milford looking south.
Is that section underneath the NS a part of the...
Are we back here?
Yeah. Is that part a part of the downtown historical?
I have no idea.
Because then you run into a whole other set of federal parameters to get around
through
that.
I have to look into that.
Yeah, you got that one. Old stone there, and those
big iron. You got the old one up on the north side of 303 that you cut through, and it's barely big enough for. Well, it's big enough for one car, two cars.
Well, the other thing is, what you can't see here is that there's a turn lane between the two overpasses.
Sure.
So there's a sidewalk only on this side. Then there's a turn lane into
the business park.
So there's discussion of, do we try to eliminate the turn lane in order to be able to widen the sidewalk, or do we simply take this trail elsewhere? So that's what our study is going to take a look at. Mm-hmm. So Veterans Way and Milford looking south. This is up a hill, and it's pretty steep. I was trying to take a picture so you could see how steep it is. There's a crosswalk here, and there's bike lanes. But I wouldn't want to bike up this hill, and I wouldn't want to bike down it. You would?
Not too bad.
Okay.
It's
a tough hill to go up. Yeah.
And I think if you're pulling children or you have your kids riding with you, it might be a little more difficult. The other thing is... the visibility is not the best here. So we've got bike lanes, but you can't really see past that hump. So it's mm-hmm. not the safest thing.
That's not bad. It's really not bad. I've ridden it quite a bit. And it's really not bad. It's much better
trying to go underneath.
And if you're going to have, I think the way they were planning the bike path was to use this, but I'm not sure how it was going to connect on a north end and south end.
Yeah.
But there are ways to get around going through that tunnel, because you can go through Owen Brown on the other
right.
and get on First and Main, you've got this on the other side.
Right, on the other side, yeah. Well, so that's the whole purpose of the study, is to take a look at what is the best way to send people. You're certainly allowed to ride this. These are bike lanes here. It's just, is this the best way for an actual trail?
But you shouldn't allow people to ride through underneath the viaduct down 303. If somebody was riding down there, you should just get them off, because that's too narrow.
You shouldn't. Well, I'm not going to kick somebody off.
Is the 91 bridge a little bit wider than 303? I don't think it is.
Well, that's what this is right here. I don't know. We're looking at two lanes with a turn lane. We do have a sidewalk on each side, but it's also narrow. This right here is South Main looking south. Did I say South Main? Okay. Main Street looking south. And this is... standing in the same spot, turning to face north, you'll see there, that's a bridge. I don't think there's much that can be done there, so we have to figure out, you know, how exactly do we bring the trail down this way? And we've met with some consultants, and we have some ideas for it. But for now, this is just, you know, part of what we're looking at and one of the obstacles.
Do you have those consultants consultants' drawings already?
We have not hired consultants yet.
Okay.
We're discussing with consultants to hire them.
Okay.
Nothing has been completed yet. We're still in the middle of the process.
So I
thought it would help to provide images of where we're trying to connect. The Veterans Park, as well as this right here is the crosswalk that exists on Veterans Way, and here is the skate park. Did you have a question, Fred?
Well, your point before, you talked about the 91 bridge. You've got a project here on your thing there that really fits into this, because you're talking about Route 91, you know, about 91 to Ravenna Road, a bypass of some kind on the Hudson. That's exactly the area you're talking about.
Right. Well, is that north there?
That's too. This north. It's right there. It's you know, square. Ravenna Road's 100 feet down from the 303, and 91's right across there. You know, that's the area you're looking at, and if you're going to talk about putting a bike path through, if you're going to do something with that, that would be, should be included.
Added to that project.
Right.
Make sure
so getting the consultant to give us the recommendations, and we're hoping to have all of those next year. Okay, let me keep moving so we can get through this. They're going to start yelling at us over the speakers. Okay, so this is the one of the next two planning grants that we're going to kick off next month. This is in Twinsburg. This is the map that they provided us in their application, and the purpose for this study is to identify alternatives for connecting the existing trails. They've got several trails that kind of end near Ravenna Road, but they still see people coming down Ravenna Road, and they want to improve it and connect all of the trails and get everyone down to the central city.
I'm not sure where are all these trails. I only know of one that runs from Dickers Creek down to 82. What are the trails that have them?
There's Laurel Trail over here.
Laurel Trail.
Then they have McTerrion Parkway has like a...
Which one?
McTerrion Parkway, which I don't...
I know where that is. Of.
You do?
I do.
I think it comes in kind of here.
No, I think those are just little short areas.
Yes, but there are people that use those that get onto them from their homes. They want to be able to get those people to Ravenna Road.
Which, you know, I think is a great idea, just that I don't know the goddamn existing ones. It's just really plan new ones.
Right. Well, so that's what, again, that's why we're doing the study. Try to figure out what's best. And last of all is the master connectivity plan in the city of Green. We'll be starting that next month as well. And the purpose for that is to take a look at all of the current connections that they have and find out where there are missing connections. So where should they add in sidewalks? Where should they instead add in bike lanes? Where should they have trails? That type of thing. So that is the gist. The last two I don't have images of because I haven't been out there to start taking pictures.
Now, when...
And that is it.
Not that I'm entirely for all the biking stuff. Are all of the bike paths, trails, lanes, and such eventually going to interconnect where you can get from city to city and travel to do whatever you want to do? And my understanding is that from ODOT's perspective, they eventually want to have 6 major, what they call bicycle freeways across the state, that connect from Toledo to essentially Wheeling, West Virginia, and points a little bit south and a little bit north. They want one to stretch over into East Liverpool. They kind of sort of want to run down along the river at some point. And they want to have complete connectivity. I think it's great. But my question is, are all of these little feeders that you're working on now going to feed into those major thoroughfares like the one that we have from Franklin Connector all the way up into Cleveland?
So what we're doing right now is not necessarily planning for that. What we're trying to do now is to plan for what's best for this community.
Understood.
Because all of these neighborhoods want to get to their downtown,
sure.
Right? So it would be nice if eventually they can all somehow connect. But at this point, we're not working on that.
Where is downtown Green?
It's enough to keep your turn green. That's where it is.
Do they have a town hall?
I think they kind of consider, I'm guessing it's Butler and Maslin. Maslin is kind of a central area. That Cease is where the roundabout is. So there's so much commercial activity on Maslin Road. Am I looking at the
right? Yeah, you're right there. Yeah.
This map did not look at all like this on my computer. So,
they do have Town Park Boulevard, which is the newest development area, and that's where they're working on their town hall center. It's not perfect, but it's as close as they have.
Town center, yeah. And there are a lot of people living there that love living there. Mm-hmm. And that still do want to get out and get to these other places and not have to get in their cars. So.
Mm-hmm. Really?
That's for each
community. That's a car suburb if I've ever seen one.
Yeah, it's grown so rapidly.
No grid pattern whatsoever.
So again, we are just in the process of getting the first two grants going. We haven't even sat down with the next two. And we're hoping to complete all four of these by the end of 2017.
Actually, done with the shovels and the dirt work?
No, these are just planning.
Construction in 18.
Construction is whenever they can get the funding.
And can do it. All we're doing right now are studying, giving them a plan to help them implement the things that will make corrections for the things that they want to do.
Heather, what's AMAT's role in the planning? What are you going to be doing the planning for them?
No. Okay, so we've done 3 rounds already for the planning grants. 2 per, so we've done 6 planning grants so far, and we're doing 4 now. AMAT provides the funding. Previously, the complete funding, we hire the consultant. We work directly with the community and the consultant to get the study together, to get this, you know, to get the solution.
So you're
going to
have an active role in actually
Absolutely.
Doing it. Okay.
So even though we have matching funds this year, and I can tell you exactly, Kent, for instance, we put in $44,400. They put in $29,600. So they put in a big chunk of money, but we're still equal partners, all sitting at the table. AMETS has a say. We obviously want to see Kent get what they're looking for, but we're absolutely involved. We attend every meeting. We help interview consultants. We help score consultants, all of that.
How much of that is open to the public?
Right. So every single
Or is it all private because you're doing contracts?
No, no. The consultants typically do at least 1 public meeting. I'm sure we've done at least 1 with every planning grant so far. And the 2 consultants, the 2 planning grants so far that have begun, we just met with a consultant today for Hudson, and we discussed there's a stakeholder group that's bigger than just the team. So that involves more city officials and things like that. Then there will be a public meeting. Then we bring back the information from that public meeting to the stakeholder group. So each planning grant will have a public involvement piece. We don't know when they are, so we'll be putting them out there. We always do. We tweet them. We put them on our website.
I'm from Streets for All, and we would kind of like to be involved in some of those closed meetings with the planning and the consulting and advocating so that we can have our hands on as well, so that we can maybe, like we just went through and did we had a meeting last week. We're going to have another meeting on the 22nd at Barley House. And we essentially tore apart the project that the city is working on for the downtown and put it back together and sent them a recommendation.
Akron?
Yes. And there were a lot of things that we found that are serious problems if they were to follow through and made our recommendations according. One of which is when they put in the roundabout, they wanted people to go in the roundabout, face traffic coming, so that when they cross, they can already see traffic coming. Well, the way they drew it was completely backwards. We went, no, wrong.
Where are you talking about?
Right down here at Mill, and right here at the intersection of Mill and Main.
Yes, okay.
And they're wanting to put a roundabout in. Well, one of our considerations was, how are you going to get truck traffic across there? How are you going to keep signs safely up if you make it too small? If this is the way you have it drawn for pedestrians to come in, and instead of facing traffic coming, they come in, they go this way, traffic's coming from behind. Now they got to turn around and look, and most pedestrians aren't going to turn around and look. They're just going to try and get across.
So, I'm sorry.
We essentially redrew and made a recommendation to the city that this is how it should be. This is what you had. This is the way it should look.
Okay, so Streets Row officials came together and met with City of Akron officials and put this together? Is that what you're saying?
They contacted us and sent us the drawings.
Okay.
And then we had a meeting of our own with...
Who's we?
Streets for All. The leadership of Streets for All.
Streets for All.
Streets for All.
I thought you said Streetsboro.
Yeah, I said Streetsboro too.
Streets for All.
Got it. Okay. Right.
And it's all one word, the number 4 in the middle. Right. We have a web page purchased. We have not put it up yet. We do have a Twitter account. We also have a Facebook account. Mm-hmm. And that is kept up to date. We do get very active with the city.
You got a question.
Yes.
What is Streets for All?
Streets for All is an advocacy and kind of sort of consulting group we formed last October.
For bicycles?
Streets Everybody. For All, everyone.
Streets for All, everyone.
Pedestrians, bicycles,
we're looking at pedestrians,
joggers,
bicycles, delivery trucks. Okay. How are they going to get in and out? trucks coming into the city.
You should do an AMATS.
Well,
you're here as a liaison, right?
AMATS knows about us a little bit, but we haven't been real active because our leader, the fellow who started this, left, and he and his wife went to Atlanta. Yeah. Well, now we came back together and said, look, we got to get this moving. If we're going to do something with this, we really need to get this moving. There's a lot of projects going on across the state of Ohio. I've got a project I'm working on down in Fort Worth, Texas, with the mayor. They've got an aggressive road program going on down there. And I'm seeing all kinds of things going on everywhere that I'm going, man, we could get our hands into this and really, really make some progress and help with this stuff.
It sounds like you guys should maybe get together with some other consultants to get
We have a gal on our leadership team who is in a consulting firm,
okay.
And she can't essentially be paid once we figure out how to do that because she's a member of a consulting firm. I'm thinking, if I can pay you enough, we get enough grant money, why can't we bring you in as a consultant and you do this stuff?
Right.
I mean, if you're already getting paid by a consulting firm, why stay there if we can give you a little more?
Right.
If we can do something, and I'm seeing a lot of prospect for us. I mean, there's stuff exploding all over the place. I'm going, oh boy, and one consulting firm and one advocating firm is supposed to try and keep up with this? Are you kidding me?
So when we have our public meetings for all of our planning grades, we will have that out there. You will be able to attend those.
Yes.
Absolutely. As for behind the closed doors, that would not be my decision to make. I can certainly pass that along.
I would like to come over to the office sometime and talk with you all. And once I figure out where our business cards went, get some more business cards made.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Are there any other questions on planning grants? Because we are about to get kicked out of here. I don't know how we
have. We haven't even made the PA announcement.
I know, it's weird. Are we good on that?
Just one other point.
Yes.
Because Watson got the bronze certification for bike-friendly city.
Yes. Just last week, that's right.
Yes.
So congratulations to them. Did you want to finish up, Jeff?
Incidentally, that grant that is the beta test grant that Akron got, as a result of a letter that the city of Akron came to us to submit. And as a result of that letter, that grant actually came.
We're hereby adjourned.
See you in February. Happy Thanksgiving.
It doesn't have
Merry
the actual
Christmas.
Number there. Has that been decided yet?
Yes, actually, I think it's February 2nd.
And you've got another two meetings at Hilton Garden, correct?
Our TAC and policy meetings are at Hilton Garden Inn.
Oh, wait.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
And the next one is February 2nd. Groundhog Day.
Oh, really? It is?
Yep.
Yes.
February 2nd.
All right.
Yes. Our CIC meetings typically are here. If they're not here, either way, we make sure we announce it to everyone via Twitter and our Facebook page. And I believe if you're on the list, you get emailed. And TAC and policy for the next year will be at the Hilton Garden Inn.
Hilton Garden is 6:30?
No.
Those are
TAC
at 1:30 p.m.
Yes.
At what time?
1:30.
1:30. Mm-hmm.
And therefore, our technical advisory committee and our policy committee,
okay.
You're familiar with them. So that's anyone from here that wants to be there and speak, you have to sign in, I think, in advance. Isn't that how it works?
I believe so, yeah.
And you only get a limited amount of time to speak to them. But you are welcome to attend and listen.
That would be my thing, would be to listen.
Okay.